podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Triad's Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. I'm excited to have a returning guest with us today, Joe Sanok. Joe is a creator behind the Practice of the Practice podcast and blog. He is a speaker, mental health counselor, business consultant, and podcaster. In 2012, Joe started the Practice of the Practice podcast, and it's become the number one podcast for private practitioners to find innovative ways to start, grow, and to scale their private practice. Joe's been featured in the Huffington Post, Psych Central, Reader's Digest, Bustle, and Yahoo News. He's a keynote speaker and the author of 5 books, one of which we're going to be talking about at the end of our show today that I want you folks to take a look at. Joe is also the owner and founder of the group practice Mental Wellness Counseling in Traverse City, Michigan. The focus of today's podcast is money management in one's private practice. Joe, welcome back to Behavioral Health Today. Nice to have you here.
Graham, thank you so much for having me back.
It's great to have you. Nice to be back together again. You know, in our first podcast together, we started by acknowledging how our mental health education, which teaches us about human behavior and how relationships work, best practice approaches behind our treatments, and the science that helps explain behaviors and functioning, doesn't necessarily teach us about the business side of our mental health practices. And at the end of that conversation, you and I were both kind of pinging back and forth and agreed to come back and address this topic, specifically the business of mental health as it relates to money. So as we start out today, I'd like to make a statement that addresses kind of the psychology of money and to get your perspective on it. And it's the statement that can almost seem a little blasphemous, if you will, to some mental health practitioners. And this is it. It is okay for clinicians to charge and make money. You have to and you get to be paid for your services that you render. But many clinicians, we know, have a real struggle, kind of at a moral, almost kind of martyrdom level with this, and feel conflicted about their healing art and the collection of money. Joe, what's been your experience around this? And let's kind of set kind of a cornerstone of our talk today around the psychology of money.
Graham, I feel like I could just clap and let you drop the mic right there because you hit it spot on with that first statement. You know, so often the way we view money, we just inherit. Just like a lot of things in life, the way we view life and happiness and friends, usually, unless we do a lot of self-work, self-evaluation, we just carry this baggage that's been handed to us. Then we hand it to our kids or other people that we know. And we don't ever stop and evaluate, is this really what I think? So even just from a societal level, in most of the movies, you know, my 6 and 9 year old, the bad guys, this rich Ebenezer Scrooge type. And so we've been trained to think that the making of money is the problem. But I really teach in my consulting and webinars and all in the podcast that money magnifies what's already there. So if you're a person that wants to help the world, that cares about the environment, cares about people, cares about social justice, all these things that the world needs more people caring about, and you get more money, that's not going to disappear. That's going to magnify your ability to impact those areas. And if you're already a terrible person that uses people and has transactional relationships, if you make more money, you're going to be able to do more of that. And so what often happens is we go into this field and we hear a narrative like, I'm not in it for the money. Like, I remember at the Licensed Professional Counselors of Northern Michigan summer picnic several summers ago, 5 or 6 years ago, I'm sitting at this picnic table eating barbecue in the middle of summer with a bunch of other private practitioners. And they were lamenting about how little insurance was paying and how they feel like they're just a step above poverty with their clients. Right. And you know, they're just a little bit ahead. And it was a whole table of martyrdom. And yes, at the time, I didn't really have the self-strength to say, wait, it doesn't have to be that way. You know, I just kind of sat there and nodded my head thinking I'm making, you know, $175 an hour at that time, compared to their $71.12 or whatever it was for the insurance. And so I think that there is this narrative that we don't have a lot of people that are pushing back on. And that's just so unhealthy when we don't push back against that mindset.
I think it's important where you started us out by saying this is something that's a hand-me-down. The creation of one's value takes place in our families of origin. It just does. And along the way, that's going to be passed down on the child who then becomes an adult, goes into the mental health field. And if we're not valuing all that we do, but we have this heart to help, the heart to help is great. But if the value's not there that you're bringing down, that's something, like you said, needs to be evaluated. That's our own work. And we need to bring that value into what we're doing, because that's going to be conveyed in the work too, with the people that we work to, isn't it?
I mean, you think about, imagine it's the night of Christmas Eve and your family's coming over, or it's, you know, right before a Passover dinner or some important dinner for your family. And the single toilet in your house is overflowing. Like, it won't stop overflowing. No. And you call a plumber on Christmas Eve and they come out. And what would our expectation be of how much we pay that person? Probably three, 4 times the amount for a toilet, because it's important to you. They had to give something up to come and fix this toilet. They got in the car, they have gas. You never second guess paying $500 for someone's 15 minutes of time to fix your toilet on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
But what's the value we offer as therapists? I mean, we are literally changing people's lives. Right. We're strengthening marriages. We're helping kids not get kicked out of school as much, or we're helping a teen with eating issues, like whatever the thing is that's your specialty. And we somehow place our own ego onto that. And I think that's the part that when people say, oh, but I'm doing this work for the world, like, how can I charge for it? Let's really step back. You're getting your self-esteem from undercharging people. And how inappropriate is that compared to saying, this is a service? I'm $70,000 in debt or more for getting this education. I have all of these skills, and I can genuinely give people the outcomes they need. And I have a lot of kind of ways to think about that, to figure out your rates and all that, that we can choose to get into or not. But I think that if we really step back from that idea that I shouldn't charge because this is good for the world, if we really play that out, there's a lot of ego that's wrapped up in that, that's just, I would say, unhealthy and inappropriate for a therapist to put on their clients.
I think that's a great point, because actually two things, one right there, those pious statements almost seem to be ego building, don't they? They're self-gratifying in kind of an inverse way almost. And it is not healthy. And then what you just said right there, it does get translated to our clients that we see. Whether we recognize it or not, just that stance is going to be projected onto, or the things that we address together. That's not healthy for our patients either, is it?
No. And if you think about it, so say you're making the typical insurance rate of, you know, $70 to $90 a session. How many sessions do you need to do in a week? So say you're at 35 sessions versus if you're charging $150 a session, just totally private pay, you can do half that amount of sessions and make the same amount of money. And which therapist would you personally rather have? Someone that is seeing 35 people a week and is stressed out and maxed out, or someone that's seeing 20 people a week and feels confident in their own finances? They feel like, you know what, I don't need to try to have this person come more often because I'm fine with the money. Like, do you want a financially stable person serving you, or do you want someone that's stressed out and maxed out? I would choose the person that feels most grounded and isn't worrying about the money, because they're going to come to that session in a much different way than the person that's just running ragged.
Yeah, I'll tell you a quick story about a guy that I had gone to. Well, it kind of holds up this idea of how it gets conveyed to the patient, or in this case, it was a consultation group that I was a part of. It was a weekend consultation with this guy who was kind of interested in, kind of an expert in this area of psychology. And I had attended it with two or three other colleagues of mine. And we talked about, you know, paying him for the services, and he said, okay. But when we got to the meeting, we had our checks with us, and it was kind of funky. And what got conveyed to us was kind of a weird thing. He said, I don't like to touch money. I don't like the exchange of money with the people that I see, or those that come and see me for my private practice, or those that come into consultation with me. And he said, so what I want you to do is at our break, and I don't really want to see it, I'm going to put a basket here on the table. And he brought a basket with him. He put the basket on the table and had us put our checks in the basket, that would be payment for the services that he rendered. And that's what he does in his private practice as well. He has a basket kind of on the way out. So there's never an exchange. He never really sees it. But that idea that gets conveyed somehow, and there's a conflict around his psychology of money, if we will, that really kind of impacts and has a larger message that sends somehow money and the services that are being provided, or the things that we're growing in, don't go together.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the concept in that some people don't want the exchange of money to be part of the session, but that's so awkward the way he does it. I mean, you can send a link ahead of time. You can say, you know, hey, I just want you to, you know, set this here. I can see in the sessions how, if that's kind of the habit you've set up, is, hey, just put that in there without all the baggage of, I don't like to touch money and all that. I know there's some therapists that are just like, they don't want that to be a part of the session, and that's a choice they can make.
Yeah.
But is that coming out of a fear or an awkwardness? Because I would think, well, can I bring my money issues with my wife to the session? Can I bring my money issues with my friends to the session? Or is he going to really transfer a lot onto me?
That's exactly right. What I try and encourage, so I mean, money is part of our ethics, being clear about our fees, how we collect fees, and we need to be really clear and upfront and what does get conveyed. And when I work with our early career practitioners, and this goes back to what you said earlier, the value that they bring, I remind them that in addition, you know, to the life-changing services and the therapeutic relationship they provide, therapy is also a business. It's how they're going to pay for their mortgages, their kids' college, you know, pay back their student loans, like you mentioned, their medical insurance, et cetera, set up a savings for themselves someday. And I encourage them to think about that, really what their commodity is. I go into a grocery store and their commodities, I walk out with a bag full of food that they specialize in. And I don't blink when I pay for that. In fact, it's understood in my transaction. I walk in, I walk out, I give them money as on my exit. And that bag of groceries that I walk in with, for a practitioner, it's their time and their expertise. That's our commodity, isn't it? And that's what people are coming to see us for and pay us for. And usually they don't have a problem with it. They go to their regular doc. They know there's going to be a copay. They don't blink. When they come to psychologists sometimes that psychology of money gets a little funky in there.
Well, and I think it all starts with the clinician knowing their worth, just like what you said. What's the transformation they're offering? I remember I had a consulting client in the Washington, D.C. area, and she specialized in narcolepsy. She was amazing. There was this whole model she was trained in, and within usually 4 to 5 sessions, she could basically cure narcolepsy unless it was a severe case that needed a doctor intervention. But for the average person that dealt with narcolepsy, she was the master. It was amazing. Wow. And I think she was charging $125, $150, somewhere in that range, where it was well under $200. And so what we did is I took her through this exercise that I often do. And we looked at, so let's just think about the work time of your average client. Like, what's your average client make per year? And she said, I don't know, $100,000. So, okay, that's $50 an hour. So in Washington, D.C., that's going to be probably 45 minutes in a car to get to her office, to then spend an hour in the office, and then 45 minutes back. So we're looking at 2.5 hours. So we're looking at $100 some per hour that she's taking from that person for them to take that time off. But someone with narcolepsy is most likely not going to drive a car. So they need to frequently have someone come with them. So if we just double that, now we're at $500 per session, just in lost time between two people. And then we looked at, okay, you typically can solve this within 4 or 5 sessions compared to, you know, the average other clinician was doing 12 to 20 sessions. And so we did that math on all that extra income and how much that would cost, both in their own staff time of leaving and then the amount of time, you know, to pay per session. And then we talked about even just, you know, socially and all those other things. And when we added all that up and we looked at, okay, in those 4 to 5 sessions, what's the minimum amount that you're saving someone by lost time from work, you know, paying all of this? And it was $900 an hour.
Wow, that's so good.
And when she saw that, she's like, holy cow. So for me to go from 125 to 250 is not a big jump now. Emotionally, right. I can take that jump because I can have the confidence that I am doing good work. And she had the evidence to herself to say, I've been doing this for 5 years and I keep seeing the same outcome over and over. So that was an important component. Also, talking to her clients of, what's the value just been for you? Oh man, I'm not falling asleep at work. I feel so much more productive. Yeah. I'm getting things done. So then she can, without revealing confidential information, say, honestly, this isn't guaranteed, but typically, you know, my clients within 4 to 6 sessions are going to see results and just be done with therapy. And when you just think about coming to a therapist for 20 sessions, having your friend come with you and all of just that lost time and money, that's why I charge $250 per session. It's way more expensive than everyone else, but we get the results and we work hard and then you're just back to your life. And that's what people want. And to have that confidence from a clinician and for her to have that confidence in herself to then charge $250 a session instead of that $125 was a no-brainer for her.
That is a great exercise. That is powerful. I was going to ask just in general, do you take or do you have an exercise typically that you use with folks to kind of explore maybe in the first part of your consultation with them? How do you understand money? How do you understand your value, your worth? How do you take I think it's a great example of someone who works with narcolepsy, but how about just a general practitioner that comes in and says, hey, Joe, I want to kind of run my practice with you. And you kind of go down the path of, let's start with your psychology of money. Do you have some exercises that you do?
You know, I think that each clinician is so unique that I don't necessarily have an assessment in our first session. Our first consulting session, what we do is we onboard using Trello, which is a project management system, to just stay organized and make sure they understand that. We then talk about their KPIs, their key performance indicators. So I want them to be able to say to me, you know, in the 6 or 9 months we're working together, here are the things that if we hit this, my mind would be blown. And so is that more clients? Is that more clinicians? Is that a certain income or, you know, reducing your hours to said 10 hours a week, so that we both know really what are the key performance indicators for this consulting for you to be just over the moon excited with what we achieved. But then frequently what happens is we'll dive into something as we're evaluating the whole practice. And we may say, so what's your average amount that you're making per session? And if they say, I don't know, well, that tells me something that you don't understand some of the basic dashboard things. You need to know a handful of dashboard things around money, like what's your average per session? So if you're 150 private pay, but then you're on a bunch of insurances that pay you $90, are you at $111 per session average? How many sessions are you doing per week on average? How long does the typical person come with you? If you're short-term therapy, you have to have a very strong marketing approach so that every month you've got new people coming in, versus if your average person comes for 2 or 3 years, well, then you don't need to do as much of that. So then we start to evaluate those numbers. And if they know them, say they're at $111 per session, and we look at their lifestyle, we look at how they're living outside of their business, and is this even enough? So one exercise that we'll frequently do is we'll look at starting with your ideal life and working backwards in regards to your rate. And so we'll look at how many sessions per week do you want to do? What sort of life factors are there? For example, outside of COVID, are you picking your kids up at 3 o'clock every day and you want to drop them off? So you really can only work 10 to 3. Do you want to work every 45 minutes you're seeing someone and you're sprinting, or do you want to have 15 minutes between sessions? So we sketch out how many sessions per week they want to do. Do they want to take Fridays off? And then we look at, okay, so the most you can do in a week is 20 sessions. So we know that. How many weeks off a year do you want? Okay, I want to have, if I want to work 46 weeks a year, I want to take 6 weeks off a year. Okay, great. So then we start to run those numbers of how much do you need to take home? Let's multiply that by at least 1.5 so that we have plenty for taxes and growing and expenses and all of that. And then we look at it and we say, okay, you've got to really bring in $120,000 a year. Let's divide that out by 46 weeks and then divide that out by the 16 sessions a week. And almost always what happens is they look at the lifestyle that they really, really want. And then they look at how they're running their business, and there's a huge gap there. They're making $111 per session, and for them to live that lifestyle, they've got to be averaging $145. Yeah. So that then informs us of what do we need to do? Well, let's look at the hardest insurances to work with, the ones that pay the least, that you know just take up tons of time or tons of staff time. And let's just evaluate if you have enough clients to even make it worth it to have that insurance be part of your portfolio. Okay, maybe not. So we look at the contract and let's get off of that insurance. Let's prepare your clients to move off of that. Let's talk about why, and then talk about out-of-network benefits and how we can do that most easily for your clients. And then you know we start to say, okay, so for us to get to that example of 145 per session, your private pays right now, it's 140. So there's absolutely no way that you're going to even be able to live the lifestyle you want, to be grounded, to pick up your kids. And then what I can do is be a mirror to reflect back and say, how important is it for you to take 6 weeks off a year? How important is it for you to be the one that picks up your kids? And they may say, actually, it's not that important. Two nights a week, I can work till six. Okay, great. That changes things. But then we're deciding based on what you want for your practice and what you want for your money, instead of just kind of passively taking what the insurance companies are, passively not raising our rates, or not even thinking about how are we going to structure this?
Yeah, I love those questions. And I love that you're kind of coming alongside them, just helping them vision and envision what a life could be and what they really want. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Behavioral and mental health professionals provide critical support to our communities in a time when our communities need it more than ever. But they need support too, to continue their education, to connect with colleagues, and to advance their career. And so we've launched Triad, the hub for behavioral and mental health professionals. At Triad, you'll find education, community, and career resources for both current and aspiring behavioral and mental health professionals, all curated specifically for you and all for free. Visit us at hellotriad.com/BHT to register for your free professional account. Again, that's hellotriad.com/BHT. Come join the community today.
Let's maybe let this pivot just a wee bit here. You're talking about there may be times, and it could be a very freeing experience for folks to consider, do I really need and do I really want to stay with a practice that is pretty much insurance panel driven, where I'm kind of restricted by and dictated how therapy works and asking for more authorized sessions, and I'm only as good as the sessions I receive, et cetera. Talk about the idea of what if I were to begin to think outside the box and maybe even do a couple of things here, maybe even several things here. What if, as a clinician, I might begin to think about, what if I leave the insurance panels and I go cash pay, fee for service? And what if I were to raise my rates? And then the third thing, what if I were to develop maybe even something, if I could, in an entrepreneurial way, maybe even something passive income that I could offer that could also be money making for me as well. So leaving insurance, raising one's rates, and the idea of, maybe is there something that I could market that could help me make passive income on the side as well? Let's address those three.
Yeah. So first, let's start with who should probably stay on insurances. So if you live in a town, maybe it's a rural town and there's one big factory there and everybody's on Aetna, and you really feel like, honestly, I'm not going to be able to serve anyone here. Right. There's just not that affluent of a population. That may be the situation where you stay on Aetna or you stay on Blue Cross Blue Shield, or you make that decision. So a lot of times people think, I have to be fully private pay or I have to be fully insured. There is a lot between there. You can have one primary insurance that pays well and you have a half of your clients. You could choose not to. You could be out of network. There's lots of ways that you can do that. So I wanted to just start with, there are situations where certain populations need that. So you may want to work with an elderly population, and for you, it's important to take Medicare. Okay, great. You're making that decision then. Don't just say, to be successful, I have to take Medicare.
Right.
That's a lie. So after you've thought through that, most people should have private pay be a major part of what they do, that, or at least out of network benefits and working with a billing specialist around that.
I just want to stop you right there. Oh, That's a bold statement. Most people should have a significant component of their practice be a private pay. Shade that one in for me.
When you focus on private pay, it helps insurance, not insurance companies. It helps you acquire insurance-based clients. So if you're focusing with a private pay mentality, let's break down, what do you need to be successful with a private pay practice? I had 100% private pay practice, 12 clinicians in a counselor saturated area, and we charged three times the going rate for private pay. So our average was $225 per session, when most clinicians in our town were charging $80. Uh-huh. Every single year, the three grad school satellite campuses in a small community were kicking out 50 to 100 counselors every single year. So counselor saturated to the max. If you wanted a cheap therapist for $50 an hour, you could totally find one. So we had a successful group practice in that area. So what does it take to have a successful private pay practice? Well, you have to focus on the outcomes. You have to focus on the marketing. You have to focus on the message of who you help. You can't just say, we help everybody. No, we helped angry kids, frustrated parents, and distant couples. And so, and then we had dot, 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 and just about everyone else. And so then we broke that down. What does it look like to have frustrated parents and angry kids and distant couples? Like, what does that mean? People knew right away. And we had these little mini business cards that just said, like, there's hope for your family, or we help angry kids. So you zoom in on helping those particular populations. Good. Now, when you have a private pay practice, you have to be good at marketing. You have to have a good image. You have to be networking. You have to be getting press. I mean, even something as simple as we hosted this thing. It was called Dinner and a Counseling Session. It was this kind of innovative way of getting press. And what it was is, it was $100 per session for five sessions. And part of that is they got a $50 gift card to go out to eat. Now, gift cards we bought in bulk at a discount, partnering with the restaurants. The restaurant never knew when it was a couple from us versus just their regular gift cards. So we just bought them in bulk. And so what happened, though, was the local news was like, Dinner and a Counseling Session. That is newsworthy. That's a crazy idea. Like, and like, we can, you go out to dinner and then stare at a screen with your partner, or you can go to therapy and then go out to dinner.
And so, that's great.
You know, the thing is, we only got one couple that paid for it. And so on the surface, it's, oh, that was a failure. Like, oh my gosh, you only had one couple, but they came, you know, 12 or 13 times. Uh-huh. But the amount of press that we got, I had so many friends that were like, what is this Dinner and a Counseling Session mental wellness counseling is doing? And so the value in it was, whoa, mental wellness counseling is innovative. They're doing interesting things that push the boundaries of what therapy is. Dinner and a Counseling Session, that really makes them stand out. Or when I released my book, Mental Wellness Parenting, we hosted this huge party where we had local bands and we had food and wine. And we talked about how mental health is not something to be hidden in a closet. It cost me probably $1,000 to put this thing on. But from that, we got great press. We got great connections. We connected with local businesses. And so when you have a private pay practice, you have to think that way. Mm-hmm. And that's going to help you stand out. And then all the insurance people are going to be like, great, I can use my insurance. And so it's sort of one of those double whammies. Whereas an insurance-based practice, you can rely on the insurance to send you people. Hopefully you can kind of go through it at 50% and have those people coming in. You're going to put more of your time and effort into your systems, right, into your billing, into, you know, following up with insurances. And so for most people, it's, I would much rather do the fun, like dinner and a counseling session and hosting big parties to give us some really great exposure compared to doing billing.
Yeah. When you're talking about the self that you get to bring into a private pay, which is a little bit more than you're going to be, and sometimes a little bit lot more, what you're going to be receiving from an insurance company, the lifestyle that you get to live, you're not going to be rushed, you're not going to be pressured, they're not going to be some of those other things outside that really wear and tear on a practitioner. And that's what you bring into the counseling session itself. How nice to kind of have a more relaxed, kind of calm, fully present experience with the people that are coming to see you. I love that idea.
Well, and then you are responsible for giving yourself a raise instead of
waiting for the insurance
to give you an extra $2 or something. Yeah. I mean, my recommendation when I work with clients is when you're 60% full, that's when you want to start raising your rates. And so throughout any given year, typically I'm going to suggest that people raise their rates 2 to 3 times. Now let's talk about who that's for and who that's not. So the raising of the rates is for new people coming into the practice. If you start with someone, to let them know that every year you raise your rates, but that they're locked in for that price for that year. And that on January 1st, you know, every October we'll send an email, and I can kind of tell you what that email would look like. We're going to send an email talking about the rates so that you can appropriately put money into your health savings account or your flexible spending account.
Right.
So throughout the year, so say you start at 125 at the beginning of the year for private pay. You're at 60% full or so. So you're at, I don't know, 13, 14 clients out of 20. So the next call is you make a big jump, and we're not talking $5 or $10. We're going from 125 to at least 150. So I would suggest someone does an intake at 165 and then their sessions at 150. So why do we do a giant jump instead of just, I'm going from 125 to 130? I mean, just imagine the emotional feelings for you if you've been charging 125 per session, and then you say to someone, my intake's 165 and my sessions are 150. And then you sit for a second with that and hear their reaction. And they say, okay, that works for our family.
Yes.
That does a lot of things inside of you where you say, what have I been doing at 125? Right. Holy cow. Right. I just jumped to 165 for an intake. It builds some self-esteem in you to help you believe the worth that people already see in you.
Yep.
So then you jump to 165 for an intake and 150 for regular sessions. So then you get a couple more, you're at say 17 out of 20. You're starting to feel like, oh man, I'm feeling pretty busy here. I'm not sure I want to take on a few more. So then you do another jump, maybe to 195, 175. Maybe then later you do another jump, you know, 225, 200, and just keep pushing it. Someone once said to me, it's the blink approach. You just keep raising your rates until people blink. And I think that as you do that over time, you believe in yourself. Yes. But then now you've got people at the end of that year, say you're at 175 for an intake and 165 per sessions at the end of that first year. Then in October, you send an email, or however you tend to communicate with your clients. I would imagine it's email. You're probably using a secure email platform like you should be, or maybe it's through your EHR, however you communicate with clients. And you say something like this, hey, Graham, it's been wonderful working with you and your family. I feel like we've made such progress. As I let you know during your intake, every year I raise my rates due to rising rent costs, additional training, additional expertise. Right now, new clients are being charged $195 per session per intake and $175 for regular sessions. Right now, you're at $165 and $150. As of January 1st, I would like to align you with the rest of the client population.
Right.
If for some reason that doesn't work for your family, please let me know. I went into counseling to help people and not just to make money. Feel free to let me know if that's a problem or if that doesn't work for your family. I love working with you, Joe. So what happens oftentimes is a couple things. People move through therapy quicker. They say, okay, I want to wrap up before January 1st. So that then frees up your client load to bring in new people, assuming that you're doing good marketing and bringing people in and reinvesting some of that additional money into your marketing. People say, you know what? I'm going to step down a little bit. I'm going to go every other week instead of weekly. I mean, that's great for clients to build some independence away from their therapist.
Yes.
To not have that weekly couples session. Like, don't we want that from couples or individuals for them to not be dependent on us? So it helps with those therapeutic outcomes. Or you get more money. I have never had someone just say, you know what? You've offended me. I can't believe you're raising your rates. Mm-hmm. I'm out of here. I actually had a couple that they started at $70 per session because, you know, at that time in Traverse City, Michigan, it was $80 per session was the average private pay. And I didn't know what I was doing. So I said, hey, I'm going to go $10 less than that. So I started at 70. At the end of their work with me, they were at 250 per session. Mm-hmm. And every single year I raised the rates and every single year I sent the same email. And one line I didn't say in the email is, I'm sending this in October so that you can plan for your flexible spending account or your health savings account. If you want to, you know, use the tax advantages of that, make sure you talk to your accountant. And it works over and over and over. And if anything, you end up getting more clients because of it.
Yeah. I love this approach of really dialing into the psychology of money around this. And what you keep conveying over and over and over again is the value that the practitioner is bringing, their expertise, their time, and it is of worth because it is life-changing. People's lives change in such significant ways, and people want to right their ship. They're kind of hooling or tipping one ways or the other, and they don't know how to right themselves. And we're talking about that's what psychology gets to come alongside folks and really help them understand and really do. And their life changes in some very permanent and some very, very meaningful ways. And that life-changing component of this is of such value. And I think what you're conveying here is we as practitioners get to embrace that. That's not always taught. But what you're doing is you're encouraging folks to really see their value and what they bring. Just one last piece. I know we're kind of getting short on our time, but the idea of if someone wants to do something maybe with a little bit of a passive income, you in our last show talked with me as a practitioner, been doing practice for about 20, 25 years now. And there's an aspect of some couples work that I do. And you were saying, hey, Graham, you might want to think about this in terms of maybe a passive income. Give me a sense of, in general, are there some things that people could be thinking about outside the box regarding this idea of passive income in their practice?
Yeah, the thing I always encourage people to think of is, and I think, I don't remember if I said this on the other show, but the idea of a sandwich approach. And so if we think about the inner part of a sandwich being the therapy, what are things before therapy? That's one side of the bread. And what are things after therapy that support people? That's the low hanging fruit. So imagine you work with couples, as you do. And so what are things that will best prep people before they come into work with you? So I imagine the first 6 to 10 sessions with a couple, I imagine there's a lot of issues that replicate them. Sure. Themselves over and over and over. And imagine if you brought together all sorts of things, either for your clients that's just added in, so it's a bonus, or it's a way to prep them and to save them time in therapy. So to say, I have this e-course, it's broken up into 5 20-minute discussions. So I'm going to do a teaching for 20 minutes, and then there's some discussion points. And what you do is you go through those questions. And then at the end, you evaluate how well did you guys communicate here? Did you get in a fight? Did this bring up some negative emotions? Did this do all sorts of things? And before you come into therapy, I want you to spend the $99 for this course. And I want you to go through 5 of these 20-minute sessions before you come in. And what that does is it allows us to fast forward your progress. And that's boy, really does that good. Speed up therapy for you. Now, of course, you can come in and we can do this over 3 or 4 sessions. And that's going to, at $150 a session, it's going to cost you $600. But for most people, doing this before you come in is just such a game changer for the work we can do once you're in here, because then we know your triggers. We know all sorts of other things. So, and you can make up kind of whatever works with your model. That's just one example. So that's before therapy, thinking through how do we best prep people, really, but also good. How can that be an independent product? So that, I mean, that then say, Graham, you did something like that and you did that for a year and you had, you know, 100 couples go through this and you maybe do some sort of survey as do you feel like that helped you with therapy, do you, whatever outcomes you want. That's then something you can resell and maybe even white label to other therapists where you replicate the exact course, or you even give them the script to record their own course and they pay you $2,000 for access to that for a year or for 10 years or unlimited. Now you've got, say, 50 people a year giving you $2,000. I mean, that is a whole new revenue stream where you're supporting therapists, or maybe even they're just sending them through your course.
That's excellent.
So the other side of it is, as people are leaving therapy, again, using the couples example, what are the struggles that people have when they kind of close out working with you or they step down? Say they step down to once a month or once a quarter, kind of do more oil change type therapy. We're just going to come in when we need it. What do people need to have support during that time so that all the therapy they just did, they don't just go back to their old patterns? And so how do you then teach them how to not go back to those patterns? I imagine there's things around money and sex and communication and kids and all those things that are worth a check-in. And so maybe it's an automated email sequence that comes on the first Friday of the month. Maybe it's an e-course that, you know, opens up access every 2 weeks to different modules. Maybe it's an ongoing supportive membership community that they pay $50 a month. And if you have 100 couples that are in there and, you know, there's $50 per month, like that's huge passive income.
That's
and
good.
You're offering some support on going from one-on-one to one-to-many.
Boy, those are outstanding. And these are so doable. And what it does too, it sounds like it's both beneficial in greasing the therapy and getting it ready, prepping people and aligning them with the design of the therapy they're going to be experiencing. I love that piece. And the idea of we get to kind of rebar folks after they leave, keeping them strengthened and encouraged and kind of focused on the work that they've done and really cement that more and more.
And then we're working on things that you already know you're doing. And so we're starting with, okay, what are you covering in the first 5 sessions with couples? Let's turn that into a course so that we can start with a really long runway. What are we doing afterwards? And what are the problems that we see pop up? So it's not like you're just starting from scratch. You're saying, I've seen this over and over. I might as well save you some time and make some passive income here too.
Yeah, really good. That's excellent. You know, Joe, as we wind down for today, just kind of in closing, give me just a thought around this. What is one thing from the work you've done and the folks you consult with and the businesses you help grow and scale? And what's a one thing most practitioners, regardless of time and service, what's one thing they don't think about regarding their practice in general and their practice as it relates to money specifically?
I would say most people don't have an idea of how they're paying themselves. That is one of the biggest problems, where they're the last ones to pay themselves. And the book Profit First is an amazing book. Mike Michalowicz, he's been on the show multiple times. He's been within our Ask the Experts with Next Level Practice and our membership community. That idea of first you're taking home your profit, and yes, then the leftovers, that's where you spend on your expenses. So even just so with my private practice before I sold it, I would every month look at the net profit. So net profit is after you've paid your expenses. Gross profit is the total amount that comes in. So the net profit, every month I would pay myself 50% of the net profit. At the beginning, that was like $200 a week or $200 a month. Wasn't making a whole lot. I was seeing just a handful of sessions right. a month. And then over time, you know, that grew. And when you get used to giving yourself 50% of all of the net every single month, that leaves a few things. That leaves a lot of money for your taxes. That leaves a lot of money for extra things. You know, in the middle of the pandemic, we doubled our ad spend on Facebook and on Google because it was cheap. You know, other people weren't buying it. And so when you have that money that you've set aside, you can take those opportunities. Whereas if you just are pulling it from the business all the time, then you don't really have any wiggle room when it's time to really invest in something. And so figuring out your numbers and figuring out how much you can consistently pay yourself every single month or every other week, whatever your model is so important, because a lot of people will just say, I'll pay myself once I hit X number of dollars. No.
Exactly.
So I say that. And then secondly, I would say, make sure that you have an emergency fund for your business. You should have 3 to 6 months of money to run your business. And so that's, if you have a physical space, that's your rent. If you have an assistant, if you have any electronic health records or your website, if you have an office, maybe it's $3,000 a month. If you are all virtual, maybe it's $1,000 a month. So to have, you know, $3,000 to $6,000, if you're $1,000 a month, you know, if it's, you know, $3,000 a month, then, you know, you're going to do the math on all of the 3 to 6 months. The reason you want to do that is you never want to be desperate for money or backed into a corner. That's when we make our worst decisions, when we're just trying to get some money. And so if you have that 3 to 6 months, if you see a downturn, you can adjust, you can, you know, put some extra energy into it, you can bootstrap, but you're not making decisions like taking on clients you shouldn't be taking on just because of the money.
That's right. Man, those are terrific, terrific suggestions. And I want to kind of segue here as we begin to wind down. You've got a wealth of resource just personally in the consultative work that you do. You also have a program and a website and a lot of resources you're recommending. And I would love folks to take a look at these things. We're just getting a little bit of a teaser of all the things you're sharing with us today and a little bit of a view of all the things that practitioners can be thinking about. Not just the ways to value themselves and what they do, but how to run their practices, how to set them up, and how to have a very, very, very rewarding and very fulfilling career in this field. Give us some resources, Joe, as we wind down for today so that folks can learn more about you and practice of the practice. Plus, you've got a new book coming out. I'll let you give us the title of it.
Yeah, I'm so excited about all of that. So let's start with just resources for clinicians. So we have three consultants that I've personally trained that have worked with me for years that really understand the whole practice, the practice method. And they, as well as myself, do one-on-one consulting. Latoya Smith focuses specifically on racial sensitivity, group practices, expanding practices. Whitney Owens and Allison Pigeon both focus on group practices and starting a practice. And then I focus more on big ideas. So podcasts, passive income, kind of expanding beyond the practice. And so if you're interested in talking with us about that or joining our Next Level Practice community, the best way is just to go to practiceofthepractice.com/apply. Again, that's practiceofthepractice.com/apply. And then that'll go to my assistant, my director of details, Jessica, and she'll coordinate with you as to which consultant would be best to have a 30-minute free consultation with. And we just talk through where you're at, where you're going to get the strongest return on investment for your time and your money. And we have enough people applying that we just want you to be in the right fit. And then my book, I really appreciate you bringing that up. So Thursday is the new Friday. This summer is going to be available for pre-order through Amazon, Barnes and Noble, everywhere fine books are sold. It's through HarperCollins. And it's all about how the 4-day work week really is that next step of evolution in the business world. Henry Ford gave us the 40-hour work week less than 100 years ago. It feels like that's so normal, but it's actually really new. The Babylonians made up the 7-day week. You know, the Egyptians had an 8-day week and the Romans had a 10-day week. So we made this up. We made up what time looks like for us. And so it's really pushing people to think through time, creativity, productivity completely differently. And we look at case studies and research as to why the 4-day week is really good for businesses. And Spain is actually right now implementing a 4-day work week as a experiment nationwide, which is amazing that this is really catching on and that this book is coming out as the pandemic has made us all reevaluate work. So Thursday is the new Friday.com is going to redirect to all the landing pages. You can find it on Amazon for pre-order. And yeah, I'm super excited about it.
Congratulations. That's a great way to reframe some things. And I think there's even value. We're talking about value today. There's value in how we work and how long we work. And the days maybe in our week that we carve out to work. And then the other days where we commit to kind of our own self-care and cultivating those relationships in our life as well. Joe, it's been great to have you back with us today. Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing us with us the things you have. Best of luck with your book. And I look forward to the next time that we'll be on the show together.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, Graham.
Great to have you here. Also want to thank you, our listeners, for joining in today. And we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Triad's Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community. And if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Network, all rights reserved.